on Apollo 17. Unfortunately, you got bumped. A geologist?
Yeah, a geologist. Jack Schmidt had a doctorate in field geology.
But he was in the initial space shuttle program. And tell us about when you were doing the GLAD test off the 747.
The space shuttle Enterprise, which was different from the ones that went into space. It was lighter in weight. It was about 50,000 pounds lighter because it didn't have all of the rocket engines. It didn't have all of the orbital systems that you need to take into orbit. All we wanted to do with it was to determine if aerodynamically that shape would fly okay, that it was controllable, and that you could land it in an unpowered glide situation. And we, by putting it on top of a 747, taking it up to 20,000 feet, and then flying it off the top, we could pick the day where it was an ideal day, there was no wind, no crosswind or anything, and pick the conditions, and the pilot could pick his conditions too. If you could go out and practice that morning and be all tuned up and ready to go fly the test mission, whereas if you committed to a space flight, you don't have that luxury. So that decision was made in order to get the initial aerodynamic data for the vehicle, determine how much margin there was in the control system, how much margin there was in the stability system on the airplane. And we flew 5 flights off the top of the 747.
Well, how about the first one? Did you and Fitz knew what was going to happen when you separated up there?
Well, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. They not only, most of the wind tunnel showed that the space shuttle would fly off and not slice off the tail of the 747. There was still some doubt in the engineering community that was going to work, but wind tunnel showed it probably would. There was a guy at NASA that made very large-scale radio control. He was really a good radio controller, model maker, and he made a model of the 747 and the shuttle and flew it out at Ellington and showed that would work too. The maneuver, Fitz would push over to pick up 240 knots. That's what we needed in order to have enough speed, enough lift to fly off and fly clean of the 747. And then when he got on speed, he would call on speed. He would dump the spoilers, come to idle, and push over a little. We would pull back and pull 1.5 G's to get off the airplane. And we'd turn right, he'd turn left.
Now, you mentioned the fact that you didn't have much simulator as far as the X-15, but you did have, a G-2 or a G-5 or something like that that was set up in that, and the spoilers and all that would come out?
For the space shuttle, we had a G-2, which was a very highly modified airplane that would simulate the response of the cockpit to every input you made. We had a little control stick, just like the space shuttle control stick, and when you made an input on that stick, the cockpit would move, lurch up and down, left and right, just like the space shuttle would. Not at all like what a normal Gulfstream cockpit did, but it had full span flaps that would go up and down, dump lift, create more lift, and large ventral fins underneath that would give you yaw maneuver or yaw feeling acceleration, just like the cockpit would. It was a really very, very good simulator for the space.
So in other words, you felt like when you actually got in the space shuttle on your mission that it actually flew pretty much like this.
Very, very close to the G2. And they would retune the G2 after every flight, but yes, it was very close up front.
Now, when they do the landings of the space shuttle and they have it on news, they're always saying it's on automatic pilot. Was it on automatic pilot when you flew it?
No, when it lands, it actually, the pilot is landing on every landing. The pilot takes over, the commander takes over at high key when you come overhead, about the time you come subsonic, a little before you come subsonic. And the reason for that is so that he can start feeling the airplane out. He can start communicating with the shuttle, you know. The stick isn't hooked to the surfaces or anything. It goes to a computer, and the computer looks at the stick, and then it decides what the surfaces ought to do. So during entry, the stick does not move if the autopilot is flying it. So you take over at high key to give you a little bit of time to get familiar with the airplane, and you make the inputs. It's still going through the computer, but you make the inputs, commanding pitch and roll and yaw maneuver.
Well, it'd be kind of hard to train all that time and then let that thing make the landing after you've been training all this time. Not many people would put it on the autopilot.
Well, that's very true. But, and you know, an additional argument to that is that if something did go wrong with guidance, if it did start to divert, you would have to wait a while to make sure that the auto land is screwing up before you took over, or you'd really get chewed out. So you got to let it deviate a little bit. Then you're taking over from an off nominal condition. So we used that argument and got and won that one.
Well, Joe, you've had quite a space career and also a career in aviation. Tell us your thoughts now on the cancellation of the project of the space shuttle.
Oh man, I hate to see it go. I think everybody hates to see us quit flying the space shuttle. I think that one of the reasons it hurts is that we don't really have another vehicle ready. It's going to be at least 5 years before the United States has another vehicle ready to go. I was telling Jeannie that it's almost like losing your old dog and not having a new puppy right there ready to start training right away. If we had a new vehicle that we had to go through a testing with, that'd be great. But we don't have it. It's going to be a number of years. I don't think anybody likes it. I don't think anybody can claim that it's a complete surprise, because we have known we were going to have a five-year gap before we had another vehicle ready to take people into space. But it just, we couldn't make it important enough to Congress to appropriate the money to develop a new system. So we're stuck with what we have. I think, having said that, and having listened to people say, well, now we got to rely on those damn Russians, you know, and that's really terrible, and they're really rubbing our nose in it. I look at it from a little different perspective. We've developed, over the last 15 years, a very close working relationship with the Russian Space Agency and their engineers and technicians, and we work very, very closely with them. And I think we're darn lucky to have that relationship and that communication with them so that we can use Soyuz vehicles until we get our next vehicle ready to go.
Well, if they put the funds back in tomorrow, how long would it take them to spend back up?
Well, I don't think you could spin the shuttle back up. Oh, with enough money and enough years, you probably could start over again. But that, I'm not sure that'd be the right thing to do. I think the unique requirements that we had when the shuttle was built, we needed a payload that big. We needed enough capability to take in and into and return from orbit. The DOD had some requirements that sized the space shuttle. I don't think we'd rebuild another shuttle per se, but I do wish we'd build another winged vehicle that you could come back and land with a stick and rudder on a runway.
Okie doke. Bud Day is still not here, but in the meantime, we're going to open it up for questions. Does anybody have any questions for any of these people here?
My question is for General Boyd. Can you describe how the technology in this airplane, your cockpit and your engine, compares to that airplane that you learned to fly in 1959?
Well, I've got a lot different engine. I've got a Continental IO-520, 285-horse engine with a three-bladed prop. And frankly, the distance between flying that original, which had a 225, and this airplane, my memory's dimmed a little bit there, but it does climb certainly much better than that original, and it has kind of a, if my memory's right, it has a better sound to it. You know, sound matters, and it just got a growl to it that I don't remember that 225 having. How about you, Joe? Do you think that's right?
I don't ever remember that one that I flew growling. It had the two-bladed prop and the little engine in it, but I was just happy to get airborne with it. I wasn't worried about growling. I was sitting there listening to those T-28s growl, and that was scary.
Oh, yeah. General Engel?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Those few times where you're out there in the 104 and you, just to break up the monotony of shooting the approaches, did you ever have a chance to do some air-to-air dogfighting with a different kind of airplane?
Yeah, yeah, you betcha.
How'd you do against the different kind of airplane in the 104?
Not very good.
What were the other airplanes?
Well, at Edwards, we had, at the time I was there, we had the whole stable of Century Series airplanes. So we had F-100, 101, 102, 104s, 105s, 106. And then, of course, the Navy down at Miramar, they had the F-8s, and they were really bad boys down there. They were good with those F-8s. The 104 was a fun airplane to fly because it would just go like a scalded dog, and you could go Mach 2 with it, and you could go to 80, 90,000 feet in a zoom and zoom over the top. But you couldn't turn in a fight. Once you started your turn, you had to be careful. If you get too much angle of attack in, you'd get that vortices would come over the tail and pitch up, and then you'd go out of control. So, I'm sorry? Oh, yeah. Well, not straight up, no. You could accelerate out to Mach 2 at 35,000 feet or so, and then 2.2 was really the limit, the temperature limit on the front stage compressor, and you'd pull up, and then you had to actually start throttling back as you climbed because you would exceed the temperature as you started going up about a 40-degree angle or so, and then shut the engine down. If you really were trying to get to 100,000 feet or so, you'd shut the engine down about 80,000, or it would over-temp, just a flat over-temp, and then coast over the top, and then re-enter and start the engine back up. Yes, sir.
How old were you from you went on the first space shuttle ride?
How old was I? How many? 49 years old? My wife is telling me 49. I can't remember that far back, but yeah. 49. I was pretty old by the time I got to fly the space shuttle. And I really felt lucky because I was almost too young to get to fly the X-15. I was probably the youngest guy to get to fly it. And then I kind of had, there's that hiatus before the shuttle was ready to go. And I was afraid I was going to be too old before I got to fly the shuttle. So I kind of just cut the tail end of the X-15 and the nose end of the shuttle. Oh, is that right? Probably looked a lot younger than I do now, right? Mm-hmm. To have more hair.
We got one over here, Joe.
Okay.
This is for General Boyd. General Boyd, I was in Air Force ROTC at the University of Florida 55 to 57, and we did a base visitation at Air Force Training Base, and they had Super Cubs and T-6s. Was that before your time?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I think Sam maybe can answer that question better than I can. When they stopped the T-6 and the Cub?
Well, at our base at Marana, Arizona, we were the last class that had Super Cubs and T-6s, and that was in 1954. And my friend Ed Bolin here, he flew T-6s the next year. Was it Malden? Was it Malden? 54? Yeah. Where were you at Malden? At Malden, Missouri. So they varied. They didn't just cut them all out at once. It depended on, you know, each base had a phase out. But it was all done there right in 54. Right. Yeah.
I think the Air Force had a very narrow window in which we used the airplane. The Navy used it much, much longer. I think the window was somewhere in the neighborhood of 54 to 61, and then they were gone.
Yeah.
Maybe even 60.
I had that number written down, but I forgot what I did with it. Anybody else? You sure? Okay.
This is a question for Joe Engel from England. You, as I understand it, flew with Dick Truly. And if my memory serves me correctly, he's a naval aviator.
He is. Certainly is. Very good naval aviator.
Was there any conflict in the shuttle, and did you allow him to fly it too?
There was no conflict in the cockpit at all. I mean, in order to get to fly the airplane, I had to learn 200 years of Navy history and tradition, and answer any question that he came up with. It was a very fair agreement, I thought. Dick was a great pilot. He was a great crew member. In fact, we started out being assigned to the approach and landing test that flew off the 747. We remained a crew throughout those tests, and at that time they named us as the backup crew for STS-1 and the prime crew for STS-2. So we were a two-person crew training very, very intently together for over 6 years. And I must say, enjoyed every minute of it. Dick had a great sense, still does have a great sense of humor. Ben, you're right, he's Navy. You got to watch him like a hawk.
Someone else? Okie doke, folks. If you're anybody that's interested in the DVDs or the books over here, Joe will be over here, be signing whatever. He hadn't written his book yet. That's coming out next year. And General Boyd, would you mind going over there also?
I'm sure
that doesn't make any difference. They want your signature anyway.